We were thinking about there would probably be about 2 or 3 home freezer size freezers of body parts because they're shipping them out, right? Well, our intelligence wasn't as good as we thought it was. There was about a little over 40 freezers.
If they're using a Sawzall and it goes back and forth rapidly and can cut through, you know, 2x6s and 4x4s, it's going to be pretty gruesome.
There's a market for body parts. How did I not know this?
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Hello and welcome to Best Case, Worst Case. This is Jim Clemente, retired FBI profiler, former New York City prosecutor and writer-producer of CBS's Criminal Minds. And with me today is...
Hi, everybody. It's Francie Hakes, former state and federal prosecutor and producer on a variety of things that, well, haven't really come out yet, Jim. Someday. I'm going to say something like writer-producer on Fox's so-and-so something show.
That would be nice, Francie.
Wouldn't it, though? But, Jim, this is so exciting. Not only can I see you and our producer, Josh. Josh, I think you should say hi to the listeners.
Hello, listeners. Good to be joining you and speaking for the first time.
It's Josh Murphy, producer extraordinaire. If he introduced himself, Jim, he'd have to say writer, producer, and it would go on for the 30 minutes of the show. So we're just not going to let him do it because we have control.
Yeah, well, you always try to have control, don't you, Francie? Aren't we leaving our wonderful guests sort of hanging here?
We have a very special guest, Jim. I mean, we have a first-time guest. I guarantee our listeners are going to be fascinated by what he has to say today. And our very special guest is...
Charles Loftus.
How you doing, Charles Loftus? Can you tell us a little bit more about yourself?
Certainly. For this particular case and today's purposes, my career is as assistant chief at the Arizona Attorney General's office brought us across an interesting case that you all seem to be interested in.
Well, wait, tell us a little bit about your background. You were an assistant chief at the Arizona Attorney General's office. What does that mean?
Well, you know, every state's a little bit different. Arizona has an attorney general's office, and it has its own law enforcement section where we have 50 or so agents, investigators that would bring cases for prosecution. Unlike local law enforcement, most city police agencies and county sheriff's office have obligations to investigate certain crimes. Well, the attorney general's office really has a very few obligations to investigate crimes, and so we look for crimes to help Arizona, to protect Arizona. And I was over the wire unit, your T3 wire unit. I was over the narcotics unit. I was over the forfeiture unit, the public corruption unit. I was also over the investigators assigned to various task forces, including the JTTF.
So that makes you a former, I don't know if you're still current, sworn law enforcement officer, right?
That's correct. I've graduated the academy in May of 80, so that makes me old.
Well,
No. Just experienced. I mean, Jim's old. You're experienced.
Francie?
Oh, sorry. Was that too early? It's too early. Sorry, Jim.
Okay. So, Dr. Charles Loftus, we'll call you Charlie because I think that's what you asked us to call. But what's your doctorate in?
If I was sitting at a beer and telling somebody this, I'd tell them I am the original Dr. Evil.
Okay. I'm glad we're not in the same room, Jim.
Well, I'm glad we're not in the same room, meaning me and you. But I would like to know about Dr. Evil here.
My PhD is from Arizona State University, and I specialized in public policy, but specifically my area of research is public corruption.
Hmm.
And that's the evil. And so I'm one of the few people in the country that specifically studied and worked with public corruption as an area of expertise.
Wow. Well, I did a few, cases involving public corruption in my career. I investigated 2 national security advisors, the director of Central Intelligence, and a random president and his wife. can't even remember their names. I think it was Bill and Hillary. I don't know who they are.
Anyway.
Yeah, so I've dabbled a little bit in the public corruption arena, but I certainly didn't get a PhD in it. So we're really excited to hear about what case you want to talk to us about. Of course, I know nothing about it, and I don't know if Francie does at all, but we'd love to sort of learn about it as our listeners do.
So tell us, Charlie, where were you in your career when this case that you want to talk about came into you, when you first learned about it?
This was around 2012, if I recall. So I was just maybe five years into being the assistant chief at the AG's office. And we were exploring putting some agents on the local JTTF for a joint terrorism task force for various reasons. We had some nuances and niches at the AG's office, particularly with the area of RICO, that would be very advantageous to their operations.
Well, and for our listeners, especially our foreign listeners, RICO is the Racketeer Influence Corrupt Organization. It's commonly used for, well, it used to be used to prosecute mobsters. It's used a lot now to prosecute gangs. And I think it's interesting, Charlie, that you worked at the AG's office. Every state in this country has an attorney general's office, and they do a variety of things. Here in Georgia, they have a civil side, they have a criminal side. They take cases when a local district attorney has to recuse him or herself from a case because of some sort of conflict of interest. So there's just a wide variety. They go after deadbeat parents who don't pay child support. They go after welfare fraud, everything to do with state. They defend state agencies when they're sued, and they prosecute a variety of state and local crimes. So it's a really broad remit, the Attorney General's office.
That's correct. You not only have the civil aspect, which protects the state and its entities, but you also have the criminal aspect. And then, of course, you like you said, there's the deadbeat dads. We have the Capitol Project, which we defend the state on the Capitol cases that are pending. So there's a whole realm of umbrella cases the AG office falls under, not just the criminal cases.
So you had a big experience. Okay, so it's 2012. How long had you been in the AG's office at that point?
I started in 2008. I retired from another job and came over.
Okay, so you were pretty seasoned by then. What were you doing when this case that you're talking about today came into you?
Well, we were in discussions with the FBI on how our guys on the task force were going to be using. What the idea was, we're going to use state charges rather than federal charges on a bunch of these cases for terrorists or funding terrorists. At the same time, the FBI had said, hey, we have a case that you may be interested in, and it involves a body part wholesale company.
What?
A body part?
Wait, are we talking about automobiles?
Well, that's what I first thought was some type of a chop shop for cars or motorcycles. Here in Arizona, we have tons and tons of stolen cars. And they said, no, this is an industry of selling human body parts.
Okay.
Well, I'm super confused. Josh Murphy, producer extraordinaire, have you ever heard of a place that sells body parts?
Only since meeting Charlie Loftus, and I am very intrigued by this world. It seems to be much more far-reaching than I ever imagined something like this could possibly be.
Well, Charlie, please tell us. First of all, the FBI is asking the Attorney General's investigators to look into this because it's not a federal crime to sell human body parts? Is that what we're saying?
Essentially, that's correct.
Wow.
It was alarming, the vacuum of existing criminal statutes to protect you, me, doctors, everyone else in the world in this arena.
Wow.
But I'm confused about the fact that there's a market for body parts. I mean, how did I not know this?
Well, Francie, there's probably a whole lot you just don't know.
Jim, that was for Charlie, not for you.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought it was a general question.
No, it was for Charlie.
Boy, I'm always wondering why you can't
eat and know
something.
The world of things I don't know is very small. Mm-hmm. Anyway, Charlie.
Francie, it makes absolute sense because I didn't know that either.
Thank you.
I'm trying to get my arms around this.
If you can't, you could always buy some, apparently, at this body shop.
Good one, Jim.
I have a price list if you want it.
Oh, God. Okay, this is just going off the rails. This is fantastic. So, Charlie, so you get word from the FBI, which I have to confess, after all my experiences as a federal prosecutor with the FBI, if one of them called me and said, I have a chop shop body parts case for you, I would be suspicious that I was being punked.
Well, fortunately for me, it was a sit down. They knew that if they called me, I would probably tell them go away. But they called us in, and this was an issue that we would be taking the lead in this case, because we have very strong fraud statutes in Arizona, and we were going to use those fraud statutes, those state charges, rather than federal charges to go after this case.
Okay, so what did he tell you once you, I'm sure, got your jaw off the floor and said, wait, what? What is this? What did he tell you about this body part sales case?
Well, we eventually learned from one of the other investigators that this case, this company, and this company is based out of Phoenix. They basically accept donated bodies. They chop them up and they create a list of available parts and sell them to medical schools, to dentist training facilities, to nursing schools, as cadaver dog training material. Anybody that needs a body part can buy it. If you ever watch Dr. Oz, he'll sometimes bring out a pancreas or a heart or a pair of lungs. he buys those from a body part supply company.
Okay, but wait,
Jim, this is like a whole new world. This is like the underworld of body parts.
Yes, I mean, I've never seen Dr. Phil with a pancreas, but if that has happened, I believe
Oz,
you.
By the way.
Okay, Dr. Phil, Dr. Oz, they're pretty much the same. All right. Anyway, the point is, are there regulations for this kind of company?
Not many. How's that for us to start off with?
Okay.
This is part of the story, but no, there's not many.
Okay.
And that's what created the problems.
Okay. So why don't we launch into it? So you find out that there's this actual existing human body chop shop part seller organization, and it's in Phoenix.
Yeah, it was in Phoenix, and there were several in Phoenix, by the way, not just one, maybe up to five.
Five different companies.
Right.
Well, I imagine if they exist in Phoenix, do they exist all across the U.S.?
No.
Really? Only in Phoenix?
Nevada, Illinois, a couple other places.
Note to self, put those states on my do not fly list.
Okay, so there's several states that have these human body part chop shops, and you find out about one and a case involving one. So what are the facts of the case that you get in the beginning?
Well, we wanted to know what was the legal industry? How did they make money? What did other companies do to make money? How do they obtain their material, their donated bodies? And what we did learn was there's a genuine, solid need for this material, and there are upstanding companies providing, they call it tissue, human tissue for research. And this is not any type of items that would go into for a surgery or for a replacement or eyes or, anything like that. This is all for research or demonstration and something to that effect.
It's not for like organ transplants or anything.
Correct. Correct. So this went to medical schools, dental colleges. As I mentioned, here in Arizona, we have a cadaver farm that we train cadaver dogs. It could go to for ballistic testing. It could go for surgeons. So surgeons, to learn a new procedure, they don't take a whole body unless they need it, but they'll take a shoulder or something to that effect, and then they'll take that cadaver shoulder and work on it. And this is where the company makes their money, is they get these donated bodies, and the people are very noble. They donate their bodies for science, and they harvest the specific parts they need, and they put them out for sale. And the sale price could be rather high, but there's certain steps that go in to justify that cost.
Okay. So you find out all this background information.
But what do they tell you? What are the facts of this case?
Why does the FBI want you to investigate?
Well, we know that we want to use those local charges rather than the federal charges for this case. And so I assigned an investigator, a very good investigator, onto this case. And one of the first things was we had to assemble enough information to do a search warrant. And the first thing we did was a search warrant on the facility.
But wait, what are the allegations? What is it that the FBI is complaining about?
Well, the material itself is finding itself its way to organizations. Some found its way outside the United States. There was some allegations of impropriety involved in internally to that organization. And there was a strong suspicion that there's a fraud. There's some frauds going on at multiple levels.
So there's an allegation that these bodies or body parts are being used or disposed of in ways that are not legal and legitimate?
Correct.
Got it. Okay. So what do you do next?
We assembled a search warrant and did a search warrant on a facility.
Okay. I was going to say, did you Frankenstein it together, this search warrant?
That's a good one, Jim. So, Charlie, when you say you did a search warrant for a facility, what does that mean you were looking for at the facility? And can you tell us, was this one of the ones that was in Phoenix?
It was for the one in Phoenix. And what we knew was happening at this facility was it was receiving bodies that were donated from around the state, and they were being dissected and prepared like you would either roast, for give you an idea, if they'd freeze it and prepare it, or they would ship it to the end user in mostly a frozen state.
Well, I have to tell you something. I've been cooking all week already for Thanksgiving. So this is super gross, because all I can think of is, you know, when you go to the store and you buy your generally frozen Thanksgiving turkey that's all nicely wrapped where it came from the plastic factory, as I like to think of meat coming from the plastic factory. So it came to me from the plastic factory and it's all in this nice little bundle. So now I'm picturing human body parts wrapped in bundles.
Please
just like
don't.
Your Thanksgiving turkey. Yikes.
It gets better.
Oh, all right. Oh, well.
Okay. Well, I don't know what plastic factory Francie's talking about, but
where my meat comes from, Jim. That's how I
hope
like
she's not eating plastic meat, but whatever. I figure, you know, Francie is a little different. But anyway, let's keep going. What you put together a search warrant? What are the results? Do you execute it on this at three? Do you execute it on this company at 3 a.m. or something? What's going on?
Well, in Arizona, we tried to do daytime search warrants unless there's a compelling reason. But we wanted the individuals to be there because we wanted to be able to interrogate them.
Got it.
And so I had my best thing that I had, the closest to tactical team, which were all former tactical officers, come up from Tucson and other locations, and they did the entry. Mm-hmm. No, it was a low risk entry, but just still, you never know. And I had one officer that had about 25 years on as well, maybe 30 years, come out after the search warrant, because I didn't go in with the team right away. And he looked at me and he said, "Boss, this is the most
you can say up, it. You can
the
say
most
it.
F-ups place I've ever been in." And this guy is about 6'7", shoulders he has to turn sideways to go through a doorway.
Okay.
And so he's going to look at me saying, "Boss, this is the most fucked up place I've ever been in." And I go, "What do you mean?" He goes, "You got to go in." So when I went in, the receiving area, there were bodies in different states of being cut up. The freezer had all types of bodies in them. Oh, and by the way, we were thinking about there would probably be about two or three home freezer size freezers of body parts, because they're shipping them out, right? And so this is a location where they cut them up, they freeze them, and they ship them out. Well, our intelligence wasn't as good as we thought it was. There was about a little over 40 freezers.
Wow.
And they were all full.
Of just cut up body parts.
Yes, ma'am.
I have to stop, Jim. I have to know who works at these places. I mean, I've never even heard of this stuff before.
Francie, are you looking for a new job?
Well, maybe. No, not this. Somebody is cutting up bodies for a living. God bless them. I'm glad you have a job. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with you. Although I'm kind of thinking about Dexter at this point, I can't help it, wondering whether, you know, Jim, this seems like a great place for a serial killer to work and kind of work out their appetites, if you will.
You mean sublimation?
Whatever you call it, technically, I just think it's incredible. Okay, so Charlie, so you go in. Describe the scene for us. Set the scene. Tell us what you see.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
Like I said, the receiving area was also where they did the dissections. And there's a roll-in freezer there as well. And they had two bodies that were out in various states of, when we hit the place, they were involved in the dissection of at least two bodies. And there was like four or six cadavers in the cooler freezer waiting to be processed.
Okay. And so they're just like naked bodies laying in plastic wrap or something?
No plastic wrap. They were mostly just sitting there on a stainless steel gurney.
Are they being cut up with like a chainsaw? I mean, what's happening?
Almost as bad. When this is something that we started looking into later, maybe the next couple of days, but I have the same exact Sawzall in my garage that they were using to dissect these bodies with. So a DeWalt battery powered Sawzall, and they had a couple spares sitting on the shelf that they were using. So they're you know, using wood blades on a hand Sawzall. And what the problem with that is not necessarily that it's a construction tool, but it's a tool that can't be cleaned. Tools that are used in medical industry, you're able to clean everything on them. The Sawzall sucks air in to cool itself, and so it's sucking in all this bone material and flesh and other stuff, and it eventually just gets clogged up because of all this rotten flesh. And I know, so they're not even using the right tools.
So you walk in, and there's the receiving area where apparently they're cutting up bodies with a Sawzall.
Yep.
What else do you see? Describe the scene. Is it a big warehouse? So there are a bunch of different rooms.
But Francie, I think you're missing the point here. Before we go on, this was supposed to be a light, less gruesome type episode that we were going to play holidays.
So far, nobody's been murdered.
Home and
dead bodies being cut up. I think our listeners are going to find that light when it comes to our normal rape and murder and mayhem.
I'm just finding that difficult to believe, Francie.
Frozen. There's no blood and guts, right, Charlie?
I doubt that. If they're using a Sawzall, which basically has teeth like a heavy saw, and it's powered, and it goes back and forth rapidly and can cut through, you know, 2x6s and 4x4s, it's going to be pretty gruesome.
Okay, that all sounds gross, but still light, Jim, I think. So, Charlie, what else did you see?
Francie, there's plenty of blood and guts because they weren't frozen yet.
Oh, God, heaven. Oh, no. That's what I didn't want to know.
Okay.
So they would cut off the piece and then package it and freeze it. So.
Okay, so.
What were they wearing when they did this?
Usually disposable coveralls.
Okay.
So bunny suits. You got people in bunny suits cutting up bodies.
No, they were wearing aprons, and they did take some basic precautions. So,
like they're wearing butcher face clothes, mask? Jim.
Typically a face mask, gloves, eye protection. I'll explain the reasons why they did that in a little while.
Okay. All right. Well, so just, we can't wait for that.
I'm practically speechless, Jim. And you notice I say practically because I'm never speechless.
Yeah,
but I'm
well.
Practically speechless.
Very evidently. Okay, so Charlie, you're in there. I assume you tell them, stop chopping the bodies and stand over there while we do the search, right?
Well, you know, you've been in enough search warrants where you bring people out, you sit them down, and start separating and start doing your interviews. So that's, yeah. Put down that arm and go sit in the grass.
Okay.
Put down that arm. Maybe that should be the title of this episode. I was thinking Human Chop Shop, Jim.
I think put down that arm is...
Put down that arm and go sit in the grass. I mean, that's fantastic. Charlie, you're my new favorite person.
Francie, by the time of this interview is over, I guarantee you're going to have another name for this episode.
Okay.
And, well, and Josh is sitting there smiling ear to ear because he knows what I'm talking about.
Okay. Well, let's get there eventually. So Charlie, the arms are put down, the bodies are laying on the tables, the gurneys, and the sawzalls are now not buzzing away. You start interviewing people, and were there any interesting facts that you learned from any of these interviews?
Well, quite a few.
Okay.
There's several aspects of this operation. One side of the operation was stellar. They the side of the operation where once they sell the material, they call it tissue. They don't call it human remains. They don't call it anything else. They call it tissue. They sell the tissue to someone for use, and the end user can either destroy the tissue itself or they can send it back to the facility and they'll have it cremated. But the donors, the people that donate their bodies, get a free cremation. So if the entire body is used, what the company would do is just cut off the hands and feet, send them off for cremation, and give the family the ashes of those hands and feet. They were absolutely stellar with regards to returning the correct cremains to the family.
Okay.
But what went off to, let's say, a lab for a dissection or for training or something to that effect, or for a school, and came back and they cremated, they'll put, you know, 400 or 500 pounds of tissue into the cremations and put them in a bulk area, and that was all stored there. That's nebulous. The way they stored that was not good, but the material that went back to the families was perfect. They did everything within the specs for that.
So were they literally just accumulating thousands and thousands of pounds of body parts that came back that they would cremate then and just store the remains?
Or that's correct.
Whoa. And Jim, you know what is the possible remains? Use of that? That's the cremains. Actual name. Cremains. It's so gross.
We had about 4,000 pounds of cremains. There. Some were identified, some were unclaimed cremains of a whole individual, and most were mass cremains.
Just mingled.
Yeah, just mingled, waiting for disposal. And it was in a storeroom, and clearly they hadn't been disposing of them in an ethical way.
And how is that ethically disposed of?
Like I mentioned, there's other facilities in the Phoenix area. And I was quite impressed on how these gentlemen did it. They would actually charter a boat in San Diego, and they would take it about 15 or 20 miles off of shore, do a service, and then dump the cremains into the ocean with I don't remember what type of a religious figure they had, but they did have a religious figure there. And it was nicely done. I even joked with them. Afterwards, they move about 5 miles away and throw the bait in the water, and they can fish on the company dime. So, you know, that's I don't know if they did that or not, but they certainly were very respectful of how they took care of the cremains.
Okay, but this particular company did not.
No, not at all.
Oh.
But is that illegal? I mean, that's what I'm curious about, the fact that, I mean, obviously you're there investigating possible crimes. So what happened next?
There is an ethical issue with the Arizona Board of Fiduciary, funeral directors. And I started working very closely with them to learn how the cremation process went through, what is actually considered tissue, what is considered a human remains, and ethical disposal of the, not only the cremains, but remember those 40 freezers I told you?
Mm-hmm.
There was about 12 to 14 tons of human remains in those that I would be responsible for in some way. So I had to know how to ethically take care of those.
Wow. And in those freezers, I imagine that the body parts weren't at all identified to particular humans. They were just random.
In some cases, they were. They were very good about cadaver 121, let's say. It's just made up a number. Cadaver 121 came in. So we took his liver, we took his pancreas, took his left shoulder, took his head. Okay, so the rest of that body that's left over would go to the cremation and be given to the family. Okay, and the parts that they harvested would either go in for storage or off to the end user and be considered tissue.
Hmm.
So
would they stay with that marking of cadaver 121 so you knew that the head went with whoever they had named 121?
Mostly, but not always.
Okay. All right. Well, that sounds very disrespectful in certain respects, but I imagine there's probably some more things that happened. But when you're in the middle of this investigation, and I can't imagine how foul it might have smelled in this particular location because of everything that you're talking about so far. But how long were you in there that day?
No, it was a 4-day search warrant.
4 days.
Hmm. Yeah.
Okay, so you were there a lot. And what did you do to protect yourself? I can also imagine that going home, you're bringing some of what was there with you.
And that's correct. Because of the hazmat aspect and the enormous, once we realized how large this really was, there wasn't 2 freezers. There's 40 freezers. So I was on the phone pretty fast to the FBI saying, help.
Mm.
And what they did was they mobilized their national quick response for mass disasters team. And they started arriving from around the nation into Phoenix. And they were helping us collect the evidence of all this biohazard material. Mm. And so the facility itself was really nicely segregated into what would be the biohazard area. And then the office area was segregated as well. So we could continue doing the search warrant for documents and other aspects into the document side, but we had to slowly collect the evidence in the what we call the hot side, with people wearing high protective suits.
Mm-hmm.
And we were taking DNA samples of each sample and all this. So we were slowly moving through that material. But like I said, I think the number is sort of nebulous, but we're between 12 and 14 tons of human remains.
And so, Charlie, what crimes, you know, I want to make sure our listeners know you got a search warrant, so a judge would have signed off on it, especially for our international listeners. That's what the police of this country have to do when they're going to go in and search any private business or private home. They have to get a search warrant. So what were the suspected crimes that you thought you might find evidence of there, and what did you find evidence?
Well, it's a fraudulent schemes and artifice in Arizona, and that's a Class 2 felony. Class 1 felony is murder in the first degree. So it's a high level felony in Arizona. And what the investigation really showed was there wasn't just one fraud. The fraud was at all levels. So let's say Josh, our silent partner here, he's noble and wants to donate his body to science. So he looks around and he came up with this location, this company, and said, hey, the inn might be near for me, and I don't want my family to have to pay for a funeral cost. I want my body to go to science so that I can help further people's careers in education and medical field. Sure, sign this piece of paper, and by the way, you can check these boxes. And on this piece of paper, do you want your body to go to Department of Defense for research? Do you want your body to go to a foreign country for research? And there's other options for types of locations that your body can be used for that you agree to.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you don't agree to those, that's part of this contract, right? You say, no, I don't want my body to go to Department of Defense or go to Bangladesh for research. So when Josh meets his end, somebody will see this information and they'll have his body transported to BRC. Okay, so in Arizona, for a body to be transported anywhere without a death certificate, you have to have a funeral director's permission. Okay, that means the funeral director has to inspect the body, make sure there's no foul play.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what this company did was partner up with a funeral director and had them pre-sign all these forms. And by the way, the funeral director, this company was in northwestern Arizona. Okay, and so most of the bodies came from central Arizona around Phoenix area. And we're talking about 160, 180 mile difference. Mm-hmm. And so what they did was they used these photocopied transport permits that the funeral director never, ever inspected anyone's bodies. Okay? Mm-hmm. And you guys from law enforcement are sitting there going, this opens the door for enormous.
Oh, God. What if? Yeah. So if you murdered somebody and just delivered them to this company, and they just destroyed the evidence and sent it all over the world, there'd be no body and no investigation.
I just go back to the serial killer's dream here, Jim.
Yeah, well, it's certainly a great way to dispose of your victims.
All right, so Charlie, that certainly seems like one fraud when you're talking about funeral directors signing off without ever having done what the law requires them to do.
You know, Francie, I just got a really great idea.
Oh, here we go. I'm not donating my body to science.
I
don't care what you want.
I think this would be a perfect opportunity for you to go undercover to actually determine what happens to a body when it goes in there. I think this is really an opportunity for you to serve your country, Francie.
Jim, I'm sorry. You know I wouldn't last 30 seconds. I would vomit in my mask.
I mean, yeah, but, you know, we would drug you to make it look like you were dead.
Now Jim wants to drug me, everyone. I mean, first he wants to get rid of me by making me donate my body.
No, I'm asking you to take this opportunity to serve your country.
Where I'm drugged and then I probably get knocked out and they donate my body to science. See, I know your scheme, Jim Clementi. Anyway, Charlie.
Well, we'll put a tag on you so we'll know where you are.
We'll put Jim's murder fantasies aside for a second and go back to your case.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
So that's one fraud. What else did you guys uncover while you were there?
Well, let's have another example here. Let's say there's Francie's School of Medicine.
There you go.
Okay, and you need dead bodies. You need cadavers to train your students. Just a basic medical class where you do the dissection, or if you're going to talk about heart surgery, so you're going to need a bunch of hearts, you need lungs, whatever the case is, there's a price list, like I said, and you need to order this stuff. Well, part of the responsibilities of this company is to make sure that these bodies and tissues are free from disease, especially communicable disease, like MRSA, AIDS, hepatitis, you know, these things that you and I don't like to catch.
Hey, bad things.
Well, back in that room that I told you that the entryway, that's where they're supposed to draw the blood on these bodies that are being used for this process. And
the ones they're cutting up with the saw.
Right.
Yeah.
They draw the blood from the heart or other areas. But if they knew the body was free of these MRSAs or all these other contaminants, they would draw 10, 15 vials. And you'd say, why? Well, why do they need that? Well, they're also accepting bodies that have MRSA, AIDS, and HIV, and tuberculosis.
Just sending off the vials from the healthy bodies and pretending they're from the unhealthy ones?
Right, because they send those vials off to get an analysis, and then they attach that a report to the body that may still contain pathogens, live pathogens.
This is no longer a serial killer's dream, Jim.
No. So Dr. Phil or Dr. Oz or whoever is ordering pancreases could get a pancreas with a very dangerous disease attached to it.
Absolutely.
Wow. That's
okay. Now you've checked over into fraud to possible. Well, that's a potential.
What
crime,
is it,
Jim? I mean, that could be an assault or a battery. If you're sending something dangerous like that to someone,
transmission of dangerous materials through the U.S. mails. I don't know. It sounds like a federal crime to me.
Well, actually, they use UPS.
Okay. Private carrier. But if they go interstate, it's still federal.
Interesting. I can't understand why the FBI didn't want this one.
No. look at Josh. Josh is saying, yeah, no, we're not done yet. I'm really glad you didn't say anything about what's going on here, Josh.
Yeah, we're not finished, Charlie. And we have so much more to talk to you about. We barely scratched the surface of this case. But I can't wait to have you come back and finish telling us the story of these body chop shops that we didn't even know existed until just now. And Francie thinks she knows everything. So that's pretty amazing. So please come back to us next week and tell us the rest of this gruesome, fascinating story.
Be my pleasure, folks.
All right, great. Until next time, thank you for listening to Best Case, Worst Case.
Best Case, Worst Case is an XG production. Produced by Francie Hakes, Josh Murphy, and Jim Clementi at Empire Studios LA. Engineered and edited by Matt Gergel. Music composed and performed by Simba Sumba and hosted by Wondery.
You can listen to Best Case, Worst Case on your favorite listening app. We are on Spotify, Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
If you want to do something about child sexual abuse, Darkness to Light can help. Did you know that more than 90% of the time children are sexually abused by someone they know?
Jim, this isn't about stranger danger. It's about learning the true risks. Darkness to Light's training can help prevent, recognize, and react to child sexual abuse in your community.
When you make the decision to get involved, kids can be protected. It starts with you.
Visit www.d2l.org to take the training and learn more.
That's D2L.org.
Whether you're working out, walking, or running errands, Audible can help you keep your heart rate up month after month with their pulse-pounding collection of thrilling audiobooks that you can't hear anywhere else. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog, which includes thousands of titles. This month, check out the Audible original, The Space Within. It's a chilling 8-part story about a psychiatrist, Dr. Maddie Weil, voiced by Academy Award winner Jessica Chastain, who is tasked with unlocking the memories of a child who went missing for 7 hours. Maddie soon discovers that there are more who have faced similar experiences, and the truth of what is happening to them may impact the fate of humankind. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500. That's audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500.